one and all, to another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, with today's co-host, newly minted City Hall reporter, Scott Wortman.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited too, Scott, because our special guest today is the third of the three mayoral candidates we've had on the podcast recently. We've had Aftab Perval, and at the time we interviewed Aftab, no one had announced or gotten the positions together to challenge him. And then all of a sudden, we had two challengers, Corey Bowman, the half-brother of J.D. Vance, local coffee shop owner and pastor. We had him on the podcast, and today we have the third candidate that voters will have on the ballot for the primary, and that is Brian Frank. So
it's been an interesting and pretty wild race, considering it's a mayoral, primary.
It has gotten a little spicy. But before we do that, you have recently taken the job of our primary city politics City Hall reporter, but you're no stranger to this world. You've been covering Hamilton County Commission, state politics, regional politics on the Ohio side of the river for 8 years, you told me. And when you joined the Enquirer, you were doing similar work for Kentucky, correct?
Yeah, I started in the Northern Kentucky Bureau back when we had bureaus. It was a different era, but covered state government for a time in the River Cities. But I also grew up in Cincinnati. This is my hometown, so I love it. And
what part of town?
Well, now this is controversial because a lot of people at the paper swear it doesn't exist, but Western Hills, it does exist.
Kind of like Kenwood. It doesn't exist, yeah. But it does exist. So
actually, though, Kenwood is, the census recognizes Kenwood. Western Hills is only in people's hearts, but it is there.
Well, describe that a little bit as a West Side.
I did a story on it, actually, about five or 6 years ago. Well, it's actually one of my most proud stories.
We'll have to link to that in the promo for the podcast. But my understanding of it, you have some bona fide political neighborhoods. You know, the city is made up of a certain number of neighborhoods, and you have official neighborhoods. You have Price Hill, mm-hmm. You have Westwood, but Western Hills is sort of like the amalgamation of all of them.
It's technically a portion of Green Township, but because Green Township doesn't narrow it down, it can be a lot of different areas. So people from my neighborhood, which was just outside the city limits, would just say Western Hills because there's Western Hills Plaza. But you
were represented by township trustees in Green Township, is
correct?
That right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to Elder, which is in Price Hill, so I consider myself a West Sider, obviously. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you went to Elder, you are a card carrying West Sider for life.
I have a German name. I'm the typical West Side kind of guy.
Do you pronounce it Vartman?
No. I pronounce it like a West Sider, Wortman.
Wortman. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking of your ancestors. Would they have pronounced
it? They probably did.
Okay.
I don't know.
So
that's lost.
And that's
time.
Why we're excited to have somebody on the beat that understands these nuances. Mm-hmm. When Sherry Coolidge announced she was stepping down, I had people reaching out to me in the community, thinking, "Oh, what big shoes to fill?" And then and some noted big stylish shoes. I think that was our attorney Jack Griner, because Sherry did bring the fashion to the office.
I gotta have to up my game. I got a sport coat on.
No,
right
I
now.
Mean you. I think you do pretty well, Scott. No one can hold a candle to Sherry. But you. I think when we announced that you were taking on City Hall, people thought that's going to be a good fit because, like you said, you grew up here. You understand the insides and how the city works and things like that. So back to this mayor's race before we bring Brian Frank on. So you said it seems to be getting a little exciting. I would say so, too, going from what looked like a walk in the park for Aftab with no formal challengers to, at our debate that we hosted, the stage had three people on it, and things did get a little heated from time to time.
The crowd really got into it in both debates, more the Enquirer's debate, but it got a little salty.
Well, we'll have to get into that with Brian Frank. What do you think, as we look ahead to the primary, what do you think, became the most talked about issues for the mayoral's race?
You know, one thing that actually kind of surprised me since taking over this beat, now this is just what I'm hearing from the public and what people have said at the campaign events, but speed bumps and potholes are the one that the people, when they have a question, like they go to the audience, I am pretty surprised at how much mental real estate that's taken up in a lot of the, at least the people that are engaged in the vote in these campaign events.
Yeah.
That's kind of surprised me because I mean, people always complain about potholes, but I wouldn't think that would be the one like first issue that people bring up. But
especially
so
when,
far, it's been
when you've had things like connected communities,
and those are, and I'm hearing that too,
right? But yeah, we tend to think in terms of these big weighty issues of our time, you know, growth and development and gentrification and, you know, public safety. And the most people are like, fix the damn roads, would mm-hmm. you? Like,
or in this case, the speed bumps that have like popped up, those under certain, some communities, I mean, some people say, you know, this is necessary and it saves lives and there is data to back that up, but a lot of people hate them is what I'm hearing. And I'm not saying one way or the other, that's just what I'm hearing.
All right.
I don't want to get involved in the middle of that debate.
Well, you might have to. I mean, it's part of your job now. Be, you know, your fingers on the pulse of what people are talking about. So, all right. Well, with that set up, let's bring in our special guest, mayoral candidate Brian Frank. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as promised, we have mayoral candidate Brian Frank. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity.
So let's just jump right in. You were inspired to run, as you said during the mayoral debate we hosted, because you felt that Cincinnatians needed a choice. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, my concern was that the current mayor, the incumbent, would not have any opposition in the fall election and would simply coast to a victory regardless of how many votes he received. And I felt that that just was not democracy. And I just felt like we needed to have somebody throw their hat in the ring, and that's what I did. I pulled the well, first of all, I talked to the Republican Party, and I asked them if they would support my mayoral candidacy. They did their research and they found out that I had consistently voted in past elections as a Republican. I'd not really done a formal registration or made significant donations, but they were convinced that I was a valid Republican candidate. And they said, yes, we'll back you and we appreciate your throwing your hat in the ring. It just so happened that within a few days of my pulling the petition, another Republican had that great idea as well, Cory Bowman. He pulled the petition. And then suddenly the Republican Party said, well, you know, we can't in a primary where we've got two Republicans running, choose one over the other, and we're not going to support any sort of funding for both of you. So we're going to wait to see what happens. And if there's only one Republican in the final election, then we'll support that candidate. But again, we won't pick winners between two Republicans. So if you both make it to the final election, you're on your own as well to do your own fundraising.
And just to remind our listeners, for the Cincinnati mayor's race, it's not a traditional primary, meaning the parties don't formally stand up candidates. It's sort of like winner takes all. If there's five people running in the primary, the top two are the ones that move on to the general election. So with that, did you and Cory Bowman, once you realized you were both in this, was there ever thought or conversation to have one step down and the other back the other to focus the message? Or
no, honestly, that conversation never happened. And the Republican Party chair for Cincinnati did not surface that topic either. So we both proceeded with getting the necessary signatures, and we both successfully achieved the 500 valid signature goal, which of course is a big hurdle. I did not appreciate just how challenging that is. I submitted, you know, well over 1,000, and I had done a really good job of asking everyone who signed my petition, when you say you live in Cincinnati, what exactly is the neighborhood you live in? And you would not believe how many times people would say, well, I live in Norwood, or, you know, I live, you know, in Marymount. And I would get all these answers that made me question, okay, do you really know exactly, you know, what community is Cincinnati and what is not?
Right.
I noticed when Corey Bowman had his early voting kickoff event, you were in the hallway and then had a discussion with one of his staffers. Did they not let you in? Or what has been your what happened at that event, and what has been your interaction with Corey?
Well, I did not really appreciate that it was a private event. I had received a call from an individual who had come in from Indiana, and she was getting a petition signed with photographs of the person signing it that she was using for a tax measure that she wanted to put on the ballot. And so it was a challenge for her to, you know, travel in from Indiana. And she said, could you come over? I'm over at the Price Hill Chili. And I said, no problem, I'll be right over. And she says, I'm going to take pictures. And I said, I understand. So I got ready for the signature, but I couldn't find her, and she wasn't standing outside. So I just stood at the doorway, didn't realize that there was going to be, you know, speaking engagement going on. And she came out and met me, and we took the photo, and then I left. But as far as I know, it was a pleasantry. They weren't expecting me there, and they didn't know why I was there. And so I should have made sure that that person had said that she had invited me over there in advance so they weren't surprised.
What has been your interaction with Corey?
It's been fairly limited and very pleasant. We've not had any sort of serious discussions at all about our positions or anything like that. But we did say, both agree that we were going to, you know, follow the Ronald Reagan mantra, which is, you know, thou shalt not say ill of a fellow Republican. So that's what we've both honored to do, and that's what we have done.
So you mentioned that when the party did a little backgrounding on you, you weren't very active politically in terms of, you know, activism or running for a candidate, but you're not really a stranger to government because you have done some consulting work in your past. Can you explain how that came about? And
well, I'd say it's more than consulting work. And actually, I have, you know, two roles in government. So I served in the federal government as a naval officer, as well as a midshipman for 4 years. So I have over 10 years of experience as a federal worker, and I've actually accomplished many things that I haven't talked about as both a midshipman as well as a naval officer. As a naval officer, I was stationed overseas in Yokosuka, Japan, and I really learned a lot about international relations. And then later when I came back to Cincinnati, I stayed in the reserves, and again, amazing things happened to me that I had not anticipated. I served as a part of the naval attaché in Montevideo, Uruguay, and I served as part of Fleet Week in both San Francisco and in New York City, where I would engage with foreign navies. Because of my experience working in Japan, I had done a lot of interactions with the Japanese Naval Self-Defense Force. And so I was on board a number of Japanese vessels, naval vessels. So, you know, I bring a lot of international experience and diplomacy, I would say, in dealing with other cultures. But then after that, I did join Procter & Gamble. I had a very successful career, 23 years, and I was able to retire. And then after that, I worked for a pharmaceutical company for about a year and a half. Unfortunately, that company did go into bankruptcy. It was 2,000 people at that facility that lost their jobs. I fortunately left before, you know, the place shut down, but it was very disappointing that that business actually folded. But, you know, I landed on my feet with a call out of the blue from Dr. Odell Owens, a gentleman who I'd never met before, said that he had been told by his fraternity brothers that I was someone that he needed to hire. And I don't know if this is true or not, but he said that I would be his first hire. And as part of that, I was going to be working on special projects that he wanted to accomplish.
Is this when he became coroner or when he was at Cincinnati State?
No, this was when he was had just been brought in as the president of Cincinnati State.
Okay.
I did say I voted for him when he was coroner. I says, that's the only way I know your name is because I'd voted for you. But I said, I would love to talk to you about this. And so he says, well, when can we meet? And I said, well, how about if we have breakfast over at Sugar and Spice? And he said to me, you're right on your path to get hired because that's my favorite restaurant in Cincinnati. And I said, well, thank you very much. Let's meet tomorrow. And we had a great meeting. And literally on the spot after that meeting, he offered me a position.
So let's get back into what inspired you to run. Besides having wanting voters to have a choice, there also had to be, and we saw some of it come up in the debate and in interviews that you have done, areas where you think the current leadership, the current mayor, are either lacking or not representing the voters. Was there one or two specific things that you said, you know, I need to throw my hat in the ring? And we'll talk about your hat in a minute. Can you crystallize that for us a little bit?
Yes, there are really two defining moments for me. The first one was the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge on the evening after Halloween when some miscreants torched the Thousand Hands City of Cincinnati Park playground. And it just shocked me that that playground was down there under a bridge. When I was a naval officer, I started my first role in the engineering department. I was responsible in many regards for the safety of fire preparation on board the ship as an engineering officer. And I went to training as a firefighter. So I actually put out fires. I've handled hoses. I've learned a lot about fire technology and what causes fires and how to prevent fires. And it's just remarkable that whoever is responsible for checking underneath our bridges for fire hazards never identified that as a fire hazard and had that removed immediately. And I have been able to talk to some people in the parking department who are responsible for ticketing cars that are parked illegally. And I asked the gentleman, I said, well, what happens if you find a parked car underneath the bridge? He says, that has to be removed immediately. We don't know what's in that vehicle. It could be a fire hazard. It could be an explosive. And if it's there illegally, we're going to tow it immediately. And I asked him about the fire hazard that was underneath the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. And he just shook his head and he said, that should never have happened. That should have been identified by somebody responsible for the Parks Department looking for hazards like that.
So what would you do differently as mayor to prevent things like this? Like how would, if it was on your watch, what would have been different?
Well, I would hire a competent, qualified city manager who could operate as the CEO for the city of Cincinnati without having to have direct oversight by the mayor, which really concerns me because we have a mayor who is supervising and directing the city manager on a daily basis, which is just unbelievable that no one has stood up and said that breaks the city charter to have a mayor so actively engaged in day-to-day operations to the point where he's actually deciding who gets fired. I believe that he directly ordered the firing of the chief of our fire department, Michael Washington, and it was based on a conversation that the chief had with the mayor where the mayor told him he was very unhappy with the training costs that for new recruits that were coming into the fire department. And he says, you need to stop hiring untrained firefighters and you need to hire people from townships and from villages who have already been in fire departments so that we don't have to pay to train them. And the chief pushed back and he says, I'm sick and tired of having people say, well, that's not how we put a fire out in so-and-so township. He says, when we have our firefighters respond to an emergency, they all need to be on the same plan. They need to know what is the procedure and they can't fall back on training that they may have had from earlier in their career from another fire department that just is not the same training that we receive and give to our recruits in Cincinnati.
What proof do you have of that interaction?
A conversation that I had with Fire Chief Washington.
Mm-hmm. You've been very critical of the city manager. making allegations in the debate about how she handled her stolen car. What has been your source of that information?
Conversations that I've had with Chief Washington, which I should also mention. I don't know why it hasn't shown up in your paper yet, unless it's recently hit the paper. But the federal judge who's overseeing the case of the firing of Chief Washington is now going to move to a trial stage, which means that the chief and his lawyers can call and make depositions of the mayor, of the city manager, of assistant city managers, and anyone who has evidence of what occurred behind his firing. And we're going to find out that Chief Washington's probably best friend at City Hall, who was Cheryl Long, they were very good friends, was told to fire him, and that information was developed and fabricated to indicate from anonymous sources that there was sexual harassment and a pattern of harassment towards women in the fire offices or fire buildings, fire stations across the city. All of those were lies, and none of those anonymous sources have ever come forward and corroborated that any of those statements were actually put forward by a person who would testify to that. So right now, it's going to be the mayor and the city manager who are going to be on the hook in front of a jury to convince them that there was cause for firing Chief Washington, and they're going to find that there is none.
So at the time when he was terminated, the city did release information about the allegations that you mentioned, but also instances of insubordination in terms of putting in policies, training, and things like that that never happened as well. Are you saying the whole case against him was a fabrication?
I am not that involved with his defense, and I'm not going to comment further about those other allegations. To be honest, I don't have the details, and I can't comment on that. I think that'd be best left to someone with legal training, which I don't have.
So at the debate, speaking of Cheryl Long, if I was scoring the debate, I would say one of the most heated moments came between you and Aftab Perval regarding Cheryl Long, where you doubled down on your assessment that she's incompetent. He replied something along the lines of, I don't have the exact quote, but what does a woman of color have to do to get respect around here? Suggesting that there were racial elements to your displeasure with the city manager. Do you think that was fair? How would you
counter that? No, I think that was basically hitting below the belt. I think that was just his way of trying to define me as a racist, and it was unfair, and it has no basis in fact. I have an exemplary record at Procter & Gamble as being one of the finest supplier diversity managers they've ever had. And I received an award for excellence in that area. When I was a supplier diversity manager for P&G, I controlled about 50% of the supplier diversity spend for the company, including all of the plants across the United States and headquarters. And I had a track record of achieving a five-year goal in 3 years. When I was placed in that role, I was told that there was going to be 5 years to achieve the billion-dollar roundtable goal. And since I was controlling most of the spend, we achieved it in 3 years. So I bent over backwards to do things to address issues where there's not fairness in the marketplace. I've worked hard with both minority as well as women-owned businesses. And I expect to be a champion for diversity and inclusion in all respects when I become the mayor, if I'm successful in achieving that goal. So it's not just going to be about supplier diversity, but it's going to be about treating all of our employees with dignity and respect.
The mayor at the last debate, at the NAACP debate, said that he's proudly a DEI mayor. And when you were asked, if I remember correctly, about what policies you would support, I don't think you specified, but what DEI policies, if any, would you support in city government?
I would support any DEI goals that the city council and the city manager establish. I'm not going to be creating any new policies. I'm going to leave those up to the city manager to recommend those to city council and make sure that they are adopted. And I will support any of those goals that we establish. But I don't feel that that's my role or would be my role as mayor to establish those sorts of policies. Those need to be established by the city manager, who should be the CEO and is not currently acting as the CEO.
But you also talked about not picking fights with the Trump administration and doing anything, any policy that they might disagree with. So would that include DEI?
I think I would caution the city manager to consider, can we do things without aggravating and antagonizing either the state or the federal government to curtail our funding or to not treat us fairly, which would damage other programs that we have. I think our primary focus should be on making sure that we get the most federal funding that we can so we can support our African American and Appalachian and other underserved communities. And we need that funding from both the federal government and from the state government. And I just want to make sure that we don't, you know, cut off our nose to spite our face.
So even though the mayoral election is nonpartisan, we all know that party politics play a big role. You would be, if elected mayor, assuming the makeup of the current city council doesn't change, presiding over a council that is 100% from the Democratic Party with the departure of Liz Keating, which I think the first time that we've had a complete, check me if I'm wrong, Scott, but this is the first time we've had all Democrats on city council, correct?
I would actually have to look that one up. But
it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been, yes.
Talk about how you would operate in that environment, being the lone Republican. Even though we know it's a charter organization and, you know, it's not a Democrat or an R on the ballot, that's how people think.
You can't take the politics out of politics.
You're right, Scott. That's very wise. How would you operate? Would you think that would be a challenge, or would you talk about that a little bit? How would you create a functioning city hall with that makeup?
Well, just like I would encourage the city council not to antagonize the federal government or the state government, who might be of a different party. But I would not want to antagonize my own city council or my own city manager. And in selecting a city manager, I'm not going to be asking that person if they're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. I'm going to look for the best candidate, and I'm not going to be looking at party. So I'm not going to do anything that might make it difficult to work with me. I'm going to treat the people on city council and the city manager with respect, and I'm not going to get into politics.
And just looking immediately, I mean, what the situation in this primary, the mayor is an incumbent Democrat and a heavily Democrat. Three out of, you know, the president lost this city with like 20-some% of the vote. What realistic path of victory do you see yourself having? Also up against a Republican opponent who is whose half brother is the vice president and is getting a lot of international attention. What do you see as your path to victory?
Well, obviously, I'm looking for the independents to consider my candidacy. I also expect that a lot of Democrats will see that I'm an acceptable candidate as well. And if you look at the fact that the mayor is currently violating the city charter, in my opinion, by directly supervising and telling the city manager what to do on a daily basis, I think they should have questions about whether or not they should change their vote and consider voting for somebody who's not a registered Democrat. So I do feel like the voters of Cincinnati are very intelligent. They're going to make a good decision. I hope that they will consider my candidacy despite the fact that I may be considered a Republican, because I think that I'm not going to be operating in a partisan manner. I promise the voters that I will be acting in a nonpartisan manner, delivering the best that city can do for its for the people of Cincinnati.
That said, and even though we know that once you get the job, you're dealing with potholes, you're dealing with you know, crime, police, budget, some very, you know, like practical concerns. When you said you wanted voters to have a choice and not just have one mayor, I assume you meant also an ideological choice. Are there areas as a Republican, before we get into things like potholes, are there areas you see the city could use some more conservative or a more Republican approach to running the city?
Well, I'm definitely concerned about our taxes and the amount of money that we're spending on taxes. And if there's areas on the budget that we can cut that aren't necessary, that I would encourage the city manager to look at areas where we could reduce our tax. And I would also look at the Futures Commission, which I don't think has gotten enough review and action by either the city manager or by city council. And I would consider looking for outsourcing of work that's being done that might be done more efficiently and effectively by a third party. You know, the one that really catches my eye is the operations of Lunkin Field, the airport that we have. And I understand that the representative that we had from CVG Airport is no longer in Cincinnati. She's left for other opportunities. But the idea was that we would lease that airport to CVG and that they would operate that and develop more revenue than what we're currently obtaining at that field. So right there, I think we could increase revenue from non-tax means. And so those are the sorts of things that I would like to do. I also feel like people don't understand why I want to outsource our health clinics. And a lot of people think that I'm doing that because I don't want to support poor people. But that's not the reason at all. There's two key things about having those health centers that really concerns me. One is we're not in the healthcare business. We've got these health clinics, but we really don't understand healthcare like a professional organization like the University of Cincinnati, UC Health or TriHealth or another Christ Hospital might want to bid on that business. So they'll bring in best-in-class practices to operate those. But even more of a concern is recently, you know, the city of Columbus had their data center hacked and they lost a lot of their data. And I don't know if we want to be in a position where HIPAA data might be released if we got hacked, because all of that information about these people who are patients would be in our databases. And I would rather have somebody like a hospital who's aware of these risks of protecting patient information and have them manage that better than I think the city could manage. So I think it's a risk reduction methodology as well that I would follow.
All right, I'm going to go through a very short kind of like quick hit list just so people can get a better idea of where you stand on things. Touching on a few high profile things that the city council, that the mayor, city administration has been involved with. Let's start with the railroad sale. If you were the mayor when the railroad board started working on this, is this something that you would have proposed or that you would have supported?
Not at all. I completely disagree with the whole thought of selling that. I called it the goose that lays the golden eggs, and it truly was. I do believe that we should have increased the rent that we were getting from that monopolist company, Norfolk Southern. But my training in transportation and logistics is those monopolies, those class one rail companies, are very powerful and very monopolistic, and you got to keep an eye on them, and you've got to hold them accountable. And maybe we weren't doing a good enough job of getting the best rate that we should have gotten from Norfolk Southern to use those assets that we have, but I think it was a huge mistake to sell the railroad to that monopoly. And my concern is they've got a huge railroad yard in our backyard, and they control all of that property over there. And I don't want to say they're going to hold us hostage, but if we want to do anything in that area, like right now we're building a right-of-way across an overhead from the rail yard, we're building a replacement viaduct there. And they could very easily put up obstructions to things like that and say, well, you can't get this additional land or you can't do this. And what is our leverage over them? Take them to court? I don't know. But it just makes me very uncomfortable that we have very little leverage now over Norfolk Southern Railroad.
Okay. Let's talk about the very recent rezoning of Hyde Park to allow for larger structure, a little more dense development. Is that something you would have supported?
No, I think that's disgraceful. I think that we've just put in place connected communities, and we should be adhering to that. There's no reason to put in an oversized building on that location. There's no reason to put a boutique hotel in there. You know, if there is a reason for a boutique hotel, if, for example, Jeff Birding were to come to me and say, Mr. Mayor, we need to have this in order for us to get the soccer match here, the world soccer match here in Cincinnati. We need boutique hotels in places like Hyde Park and Mount Adams. Then that would be a different consideration. But I don't see the reason right now why we need to have a boutique hotel in Hyde Park Square. So I think we've really dissed the community council there. We've dissed the companies that had storefronts in those locations. And I don't think we're going to be happy with the increased amount of traffic. And I think that there's a real concern about the safety of students and other people walking on sidewalks. I think that we're going to find that we're going to have real issues with pedestrian safety near the square.
All right. Finally, going back to you saying that you would not want to antagonize the White House. Cincinnati City Council a year or so ago voted to be a sanctuary city. Is that something that, as mayor, you would actively try to reverse, even though it really hasn't had any tangible, measurable effect so far?
It's not going to be a priority for me to try to overturn that. I want to focus on things that will have a real impact on Cincinnati and how we operate. If I got the sense that it was limiting our ability to get funding, then I would. And, you know, I would like to call into question why we only got $5 million from the state of Ohio when we wanted to bring the Sundance Film Festival here. I have to question if we did a very successful job of reaching out to the state, because Colorado put up, I think, $300 million to get the Sundance Film Festival. And how could the Sundance Film Festival turn down that sort of largesse from the state of Colorado when we're only able to come up with $5 million? And I think they saw the writing on the wall that we really didn't have the support of the state to bring that world-class festival here to Cincinnati, which is a real shame.
You've mentioned to me, too, going back on you know, how you handle the Trump administration, federal government, that you do differ from the Republicans on LGBTQ issues. So I guess that begs the question, why are you a Republican? Why do you support Trump, and why are you a Republican?
Well, I hearken back to Ronald Reagan. I view myself as a Ronald Reagan Republican, a conservative, limited government, lower taxes, empowerment of people to achieve their dreams, and not with government oversight. So I want to limit how much impact the government has on your daily life and how much control they place on the citizens. I think the less government there is typically the direction that I would encourage city council, and that we should not become a mommy state where we're dictating things like you have to have all these connections for electric vehicles in your front yard, and that we need to be investing in all these green sustainability initiatives. I think that can be very costly and very expensive, and we're really not in a great position to fund things like that when we've got so many other things that aren't being funded. And I point out our school system. I think our K through 12 students are being ripped off. I think they're getting a second-class education. I think many of them are graduating with diplomas that aren't worth the paper they're printed on. And I really feel like it's time for us to consider if the city of Cincinnati should take control of the public school systems, which we do have a right to do if we were to pass an initiative to change the charter to take over a city schools. And I think that might be something that I would ask the city council, the future city council, to consider under consideration to change the charter.
You said you're a Ronald Reagan Republican. What is your opinion of Trump?
I think he's a great businessman. I think he's a successful businessman. I think he's trying to bring his business style approach, which is kind of like what I consider a monopoly. I mean, he comes across as a very powerful monopoly type business person, and that's not the kind of style I would want to operate on. I try to operate on a democratic principle where everyone should be able to put forward their ideas and that we not bully people into positions. And I would want to get people to align behind a policy as much as possible versus bully people, intimidate people, and do things unilaterally and wait for courts to decide whether or not the action taken was legal or not. That's not my style. I'm not about to start throwing, you know, grenades at people. I'm going to try to do as much as I can through cooperation and peaceful negotiation to show where the best value is for everyone if we can work together on something that we can all agree to.
So do you see Trump as a bully?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think he would even admit he's a pretty effective bully. I don't think he thinks bully is a bad word. I think he thinks, especially when he's dealing with the Chinese, that he needs to be very aggressive. And unfortunately, I think he kind of uses that go-to mode of being a very powerful, aggressive leader when dealing with people on the opposite side of the aisle in Congress. And I would not take that approach as a leader. Of course, I'm not in his shoes. I'm not sitting in the White House. I don't know how difficult it is to get things done on the federal level. But I think here in Cincinnati, we're a very welcoming, warm city with people who are not trying to be antagonistic or hurtful towards each other. And I think I can work with the other side of the aisle here pretty easily.
So the last of my lightning round questions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
To.
No, I like these are good.
I didn't mean to halt the lightning round.
That's all right. You said that the sanctuary city issue was not going to be your priority, but you have to have some idea of what your priority would be in your first, let's say, 30 days. The first meeting you call for the first issue you really want to hit head on if you were elected mayor, what would that be?
Well, the first issue, and I think the most important issue, is youth violence. I believe that our youth are on a daily basis being hit on all sides by stressors, things that cause trauma in their lives, whether it be gunfire in their neighborhood, dogs barking, and sirens going off, and parents that are fighting over budgets that they can't hit, and where are they going to cut money to you know, make a car payment or things like that. I think our young people are under so much stress that as they're getting older and have access to guns and things like that, they are getting violent, and they're taking violence into their own hands because that's the best that they think they can do to address and bring more power in their life. And I think we need to engage with our health advisors. I want to reach out to our nonprofits and to the business community. And my goal would be to try to immediately raise up to $50 million, not from taxpayers, but from the business community, from the healthcare industry, to put together a program to address the childhood trauma that I think so many of our youth are suffering from and provide treatment for these individuals in a very positive manner so that we can give them other ways to deal with the anger that they are feeling and not vent using violence, but to use constructive means of working with their teachers and family friends and parents to say, I'm really concerned about, you know, my being able to get to school without being harassed and my money being taken by a bully or someone like that, and work with parents and teachers and others to remove the drama and the stress that these kids are facing on a daily basis. So that's what I would try to do. I think that $50 million goal is something that is achievable. And I have a number of connections in the business and in the nonprofit industries that we have. And I think I could raise that and start having a real impact on youth violence.
All right.
Is that the lightning round?
That's the end of the lightning round, but as promised. Yeah. Since you've thrown your hat in the ring, we have to ask you about the black hat. I don't know if it's a Stetson or not. It's sharp. It could be. Have you always worn that hat, or did you decide upon running that you wanted to be, you know, you wanted to have a brand, something that people could recognize you? I should also note that one of your primary campaign tactics is to stand on a busy street corner. You have got some great signs. I think one of them says, what, remind me, your main sign.
Honk if you love the USA.
Yes, which sounds very Trumpish, I would say.
I think we all love the USA. I get a lot of people honking at me.
I bet. Tell us about the hat.
Well, actually, there are two hats. All you've seen is the black hat. I purchased two hats. I purchased a white Stetson, and that was the primary purchase. I purchased the white Stetson. It was for my sister on her 63rd birthday, which was in August of last year. My sister and I don't often see each other. She lives up in Buffalo. And I took the white hat up to give it to her in person, and I took the black hat with me. We both grew up with horses. We lived on a farm, 11-acre farm, when we grew up, and we each had our own horse. And I know that she did not have a white hat or any hat to wear. She had a horse still, and she didn't have a hat. And so I wanted to give her something that she would think about me when I'd gone back to Cincinnati. So I took the white hat with me. I took the black hat with me. We went to the rodeo together, which was my other gift that I gave to my sister. And we had a wonderful birthday. Sadly, she died 3 months later. She had a serious cancer. And so I'm very happy that I gave her that gift. And she had a few months of riding her horse with the white Stetson hat, which is still, you know, in the possession of the family. So I now wear the black hat in remembrance of my sister who recently passed within, you know, the last 6 months.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Well, that's...
And I'm not a brander. I mean, I didn't do this to brand myself. I'm sorry.
Well,
that's
now,
not
no,
my intention.
I mean, it has become sort of your signature look, and now we know the very poignant backstory to that. So I'm really glad you shared that with us. Is there anything else before we wrap up that you think we didn't get to that you would like our listeners to know?
Well, I would just like all the voters to know that I don't want you to think about me as Republican. I want you to think of me as a person that's been in this city for 40 years and is going to be looking to make the best city that he can possibly do in the role of mayor, and that I'm going to respect everyone on council and their opinion. And I just hope that you can think more broadly than just Democrat, Republican, and give me a chance to prove myself that I can be a mayor for all Cincinnatians.
All right. With that, Brian Frank, candidate for mayor, we thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. You.
All right, well, there you have it, Brian Frank. And you know what? I'm feeling a tad guilty, Scott.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I, like many others, have thought, what is up with that hat, you know?
Yes, we finally got to the bottom of that.
And it's a sweet, touching story. So, you know, I think I might have, you know, had a good laugh about the hat. Like, you know, is he a cowboy? Why is he wearing a cowboy hat all the time? He's running for Cincinnati mayor, but now we know the backstory of the hat, and it is quite touching.
That's why we ask the questions and put people on the spot.
Why we do this podcast, so people can, you know, get to know newsmakers better, get to know, you know, that they're actually really people, even though sometimes we don't treat them that way because they're public figures, right?
And never make assumptions on why people look or do
exactly
or say what they do.
Well, what a lesson for us all. So I wanted to ask you about, as we are wont to do at the end of this podcast, have you had something happen to you recently where you just had to stop, shake your head and say, wow, that was so Cincinnati, what just happened?
It's sort of as far as the recency of it, but I went with my girlfriend to this revolving sushi place in Hyde Park on the east side. It's
Wait a minute. Stop right there.
I'm getting to the Cincinnati part. I know
well,
this is
but earlier I called you a card-carrying member of the West Side.
Yes.
Are you allowed to go to Hyde Park being a dyed-in-the-wool West Sider?
I'm region-wide. I lived in Northern Kentucky for a long
You're
time.
You're cosmopolitan.
I am, yes.
You're Cincinnati cosmopolitan.
I'm cultured.
You frequent both sides of town. A lot of people who live on the West Side swear they would get lost on the East Side without GPS and vice versa. But you're comfortable on both sides.
I am.
All right.
I'm an ambassador.
So a guy went to Elder who grew up in Western Hills was having sushi in Hyde Park.
That's right. That's dangerous.
In and of itself is Cincinnati.
I love rock and roll.
All right. So continue. You're having sushi in Hyde Park.
And that's not the point of it, but it does show how it's a small town, because one of the last times that we were there, we saw Secret Service outside, and I knew immediately that the vice president was in the same restaurant. And a few months earlier, we were out to eat, and there was Secret Service in front of the restaurant. My point is, in Cincinnati, you can't avoid running into people. There's maybe 10 people in the city, I think.
It feels that way sometimes.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyways, it was a great meal. There were no vice presidents the last time I went this past weekend.
Now, when you first went there and saw the vice president, were you able to say hello? Was he talking to people or was he pretty...
Was he secured in a private area? I don't know if you know how the Secret Service works, but there were a lot of people with earpieces on,
sure.
And I was not going to test the security there. And that was not too long after the incident and the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania. So they're kind of on a heightened.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But they were very
so.
Cordial, though.
Yeah, they
the Secret
tend to be.
Service.
Little known fact. My younger brother was a Secret Service agent.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he originally joined the agency working, helping to provide security for visiting dignitaries to the UN. And then before all was said and done, he was on the Clinton details. So spending a lot of time in Chappaqua, upstate New York, guarding the Clintons. So I kind of know how they work. He's got some good stories.
I would imagine. Can he tell them?
No, he'd have to kill us. Yeah. And he's trained in that, too. So anyway, Scott, thank you for co-hosting today.
It's been a pleasure.
It was outstanding. Are you ready to wrap this up?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.